We are.
We tried it in World War One. We tried it in World War Two. We tried it with terrorism. And in every case, it took a death of Americans for us to get engaged. And in every case, we are so much better off helping. In the case of Ukraine, I think the most compelling argument, besides the fact that they were the third largest, most powerful nuclear power in the world, they voluntarily gave up their nuclear weapons after the Cold War in return for the promise from the United States that we would have their backs, along with agreeing to the borders that that they've been defending. So, you know, we have some not just contractual but moral obligations in Ukraine, and the fact that they're not asking for a single American to shed their blood for their freedom. All they're asking for is for us to have the back with mainly with bullets and air defense systems, as well as some more aggressive weapon systems that the administration's been reluctant to give them. So while none of them are ideal, all of them are better than the alternative, which right. is eventually we get sucked in because of our Article 5 obligations under NATO or, remembering how many troops we have in places like Europe, mm-hmm. places like South Korea. I mean, yeah. you know, we've had troops in South Korea since the Korean War. So,
we just had a gentleman from the North Dakota National Guard when he was active duty. He served in South Korea.
Sure. Yeah. No, it's amazing. And anyway, so that's what's going on. I think what'll happen is that package will get bundled. I think anyway, they'll pass it out of the House tomorrow is my understanding, because they have the 72-hour rule where yep. the whole package has to be.
Which is a good thing.
Mike, that's a good thing. Again, back to transparency, right?
Yep.
Everybody will get to vote for what they want and vote against what they don't want. Good for Mike Johnson for doing that.
You were
that.
Very assertive about that when you were in the House, about needing
sure
that.
Was.
Yeah, you were. You were way out in front on that.
I'm still upset in the Senate where they, you know, would they whip the votes to find out if something's going to pass or not before they determine whether they're going to put it on the floor. It's like, well, if you're going to do that, what you don't need me. You know, there's 100 of us. And we all have a vote. Damn it. Anyway, so
it's like beating your child before they make the mistake.
Well, exactly. So I've been on a little bit of my high horse lately with.
Sure.
With leadership here in the Senate over the same thing. We are paid, we are elected and paid to take votes, hard ones and easy ones, not just the easy ones. And so, anyway, all of that said, that's what's going to happen. I think when they get it all done on Saturday, they'll probably send it over if they can, you know, Saturday, if not, probably Sunday, where we won't be open. And then Monday is Passover. So Monday until Tuesday at dark is Passover. My sense is, maybe we come back for a Tuesday night vote, even though we're supposed to be off for Passover.
Yeah.
Come back on the Tuesday night vote and finish that package up. But we'll see. That's
yep.
the best case.
Well, Senator Kevin Cramer, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show. We really appreciate it. You are held in the highest of high esteem here. I am Michael Bell. This is Dakota Mornings. Welcome back to Dakota Mornings. I'm your host, Michael Bell, KFIRE, 550 AM, 99.7 FM. We are an iHeartMedia production, and we have joining us from on the phone from Nebraska, Trent Luce, a man who needs no introductions, least of all by me. He is broadcast on, he's carried by, 100 stations or something to that effect, a farmer, a rancher, and a significant voice within the Northwest landowners here in North Dakota. Trent, thank you for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for allowing me to finally, Michael. I think it's a perfect day for me to be on here, first of all, with...
I knew Trent was going to stop when that line was coming up.
So
I knew it.
We
got to
get that in. That's just customary.
Well, what's it like having your last name in song? I'm familiar with that a little bit, but I do want to say two things up front. And the first one is, I love the concept of your lead in for Loose Tales. Your daughter, it was 20 some years ago when she recorded that. And you talked about it, last summer, I believe. And I was touched by the continued involvement of your family in your show and your continued talk about your family in your show. And I think that that's just a wonderful concept and it bespeaks well of you. I also love your tagline, be gentle, stay firm. I have been a big fan of that for a long time. So I want to make sure and point those two things out here.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, everything I do is for the next generation, so it's only important that I bring the next generation to our everyday life and share the real world with the people that we're on this journey together with. And I don't know if you know the history of Be Gentle, Stay Firm, but it's worth a minute of sharing.
Absolutely. Please do.
We used to go to the Brighton, Colorado draft horse and mule sale on a regular basis, and one year there was a gentleman there, Moses Del Barney from the state of Idaho, and he was 80 years old, and he was just a master at taking care of Percheron horses. And so I did an interview with him, and I said, these horses are huge. You've been so successful for so long. What's your key to success? He looked me in the eye, and he said, whether you're dealing with people or horses, you be gentle, stay firm. And so that slogan just really hit me hard, but then I didn't do much with it until my father passed, now coming on 6 years ago.
And sorry for your loss.
Thank you. When I was giving that celebration and tribute to his life, I realized that's how he raised the three of us. I had a brother and I have a sister, and he raised us to be gentle, stay firm. And I think that is really what life is about, and people get misguided. And that's why I'm going to be gentle, Michael, today, because I'm here on a day when you got a lot to clean up. I heard at the beginning of the show, you misspoke yesterday about some people participating in the lawsuit. I had several people.
Well, I was cleaning up Scott Hennin's mess, to be perfectly clear. I was cleaning up Scott Hennin's mess, who, and Scott, he was a joy to have on the show yesterday. He left a couple of turd piles for me to clean up, and I'm happy to do that.
It was weird seeing him in this room again.
But you got your own turd pile to clean up here, because you've been telling people all week that you've been reaching out to me, and I refuse to join you to talk about CO2 pipeline, and you've not reached out to me once.
Well,
I'm here today because I reached out to you.
Yes, that is correct. You did reach out to me. I reached out to you some time ago, right when I first started the show. I have verified that, and there was apparently, I don't know. What I know is that I reached out to you, or I thought I'd reached out to you, with a phone number that had been given to me by someone here in the studio. I did not hear back, and so I assumed that you did not want to come on the show. It was part of my frustration when I first started the show, is that I asked a number of people from the purported K-Fire family to come on the show, two of whom declined, one of whom never responded, and I was deeply frustrated by that, because I thought we were all a family.
Yeah, well, I never say no to anybody that wants to allow me to talk, because I like hearing myself talk, obviously. I grant that opportunity plenty.
I do not like hearing myself talk, but we can certainly put you in a rotation for a regular appearance. I would be deeply grateful if you would agree to that.
Yeah, well, and particularly on the topic that you said you wanted me to talk about, because this is a hill I'm willing to die on, and that is the danger that comes along with the CO2 pipeline. Not only the danger in what will happen when there's a rupture in the 3-mile kill zone that exists with that, but the danger of taking a plant food and burying it 1.5 miles deep in a way that's never been done before, and what that might mean to the folks of Oliver and Mercer County. I mean, these are things I'm very passionate about and have spent every single day on for the past 3 years.
Okay, so let's talk about that. You believe that it is unsafe, toxic, and deadly. Is that a fair assumption or assessment?
Well, let's qualify that. Water is the number one killer of people worldwide on an annual basis. And yet water, the body is made of 62% water. So anything, the sun is also a killer. So it's a matter of keeping things in context and understanding that we know that it's not safe for humans, because the last tier of technology in euthanizing animals in the pork industry and the turkey industry right in here on South Dakota, Dakota Provisions, and the chicken industry, they put them in a CO2 chamber and put them to sleep. They euthanize the animals by putting them in a CO2 chamber. So we know that there's an inherent risk. The bigger question is, why are we putting a pipeline in our part of the world? We're talking about a pipeline that's 2,000 miles long, and why are we putting CO2 in the ground? The biggest misnomer that nobody can explain to me, and I fully understand enhanced oil recovery, but we headed down this path of getting paid $85 per metric ton because CO2 is somehow causing a climate crisis. And the climate crisis is caused because we're burning petroleum and we're using coal. Nobody's a bigger fan of coal and petroleum and the Bakken oil field than Trent Luce. But when you tell people that we've got to capture the CO2 and then use 35% of the energy that's produced at Coal Creek Station in order to compress the CO2, get it in the pipeline, and then send it somewhere to bury it because it's a danger to the planet, only now we're going to use it to do enhanced oil recovery and generate more oil, which I think is a good thing, but you can't do only with the CO2. You got to have a blend of CO2 and natural gas. That never gets told out of the equation. When you have all of these factors, it kind of comes back to what Kevin Cramer said in the last segment, which I think is perfect. We didn't used to buy into all of this misinformation, but here we are today buying into the misinformation. But Michael, it's not the majority of the Dakotas that are buying into it. It's only the crony capitalists who are getting paid big money with taxpayer dollars to perpetuate something that isn't a problem.
Okay, so you're talking about 45Q, I believe, as a tax credit. And
45Q.
45Q
was signed in 2008. It was then furthered by the Use It Act, sponsored by the guy you just had on the air, Kevin Cramer, and signed by Donald Trump in December of 2020. And then we have the Inflation Reduction Act that moved it from $50 per metric ton to $85 per metric ton.
Right. And the establishment of 45Q was... The origination of 45Q was established in the Bush administration, the George W. Bush administration, to combat the production tax credit. Because George W. Bush said, if the solar and wind folks are getting a tax credit, then the fossil fuel folks are getting a tax credit as well. Taking advantage of that, I personally think we should wipe out all tax credits. And I lobbied on behalf of tax credits for a number of different industries for a number of different years. Now, that said, if you're going to compete with the production tax credit, you can either kill it or you can come up with another structure, another framework for there to be a level playing field. That's what 45Q is. 45Q is also... I'm sorry, go ahead.
If you want to saddle up and ride across the river together, we'll be together and killing not only 45Q, 45Z, but every tax credit that was ever created. Because you got to
let's do it.
Who needs tax credits? I don't need tax credits.
Yeah, let's
it's
do
Warren
it.
Warren Buffett and Bill Gates that needs tax. It's Harold Hamm that needs a tax credit and Bruce Rastetter. So why are we the peasants continuing to put money in their pockets?
Because they're employers. And they are tasked with finding a way to generate revenue for their companies, for their employees, of which they are a legion.
I'm fine with that until it's my taxpayer dollar that makes that happen in a lie that says that CO2 is all about carbon or climate crisis mitigation. When in fact you have people like Jeff Stewart who've been buying CO2 and they priced him out of the market. So he can't buy it for his dry ice business because we have a few people trying to monopolize this commodity for the future. So if we're going to partner up and kill all tax credits and investment credits coming from solar, I'm in.
Yeah, let's do it. I couldn't be more serious. I don't know if you know this, but this show is dedicated toward providing tax relief for North Dakota citizens. I ask every legislator that comes on the show what their plans are for tax relief for North Dakota citizens. I plan to ask them during the legislative session, what have you done today to provide North Dakota citizens with tax relief? I am a huge proponent of tax release, of tax cuts, economic responsibility, which is balanced to reduce the deficit. I think that balancing the budget might be a bridge too far right now. But, you know, if you want to go to Washington and lobby on behalf of, you know, there's a piece of legislation that's passed every year called extenders. It's the tax extenders legislation, which extends myriad tax credits. And I am all for taking that down, because if you want to level the playing field, you need to level it completely.
That's fine. You go to D.C. You just spent 30 minutes talking to Kevin Cramer, and all he talked about was spending, because that's all D.C. thinks about. It's a lost cause. I'm going to go to Lytton, I'm going to go to county seats around this part of the country and fix it at the county level first, because until we fix it at the school board and county commissioners, and I didn't just say that Emmons County is the problem. What I said was, I was using it as an example, that we're going to need to fix this at the local level and then tell D.C. to go fly a kite, because
Amen.
That's a lost cause.
Well, that's definitely one way to look at it. I have a different background. I certainly appreciate the bottom-up model. I also feel that the top-down model is necessary as well, because one of the things we do on this show is speak truth to power. And there is a lot of misinformation and disinformation being spread on myriad topics. And I try to, and we try to stop it in its tracks, and provide an alternative set of policy provisions.
But that sounds perfect. We need action, not rhetoric.
Okay.
And we need boots on the ground to make it happen. And while we're doing
we need the votes.
The election process. All right. You got to get the. You do need the votes, and you need to know that when you go vote, you don't have some total vote or some other algorithm altering what it is you vote. That's the first vote we need to focus on.
Yeah.
We need to do that hand count in North Dakota.
No. We've seen what a hand count does. We just went through the Republican state convention. That was a freaking disaster. We have in North Dakota, we have the most safe and secure election integrity provisions. We require ID, and we don't have parties. Those two things guarantee.
Hold on one second.
We're going to go to a break. We're going to come back on the other side of the break. We're going to continue this conversation. This is Trent Luce. I am Michael Bell. This is Dakota Mornings. Welcome back to Dakota Mornings. I am your host, Michael Bell. KFYR 550 AM, 99.7 FM. We are an iHeartMedia production. That drives Todd nuts every time I say that. But I'm going to continue to say it because I like to poke Todd. So we have Trent Luce on the line calling in, and we've shifted a little bit to talk about election integrity.
Okay, but hold on. Hold the show, Michael.
Okay.
I just heard a voice on one of those spots it's a lovely voice, and
Jeff
I understand
Simon?
That you turned the reins over to Kay, the show, LeCoe recently on your broadcast. If you're going to do that, then I'm going to have her host, Trent on the Loose, on my Beck TV program one day this week.
Because
I can't have you getting K more than I get.
That's perfectly fair and reasonable. And she is the top of the heap when it comes to guest hosting the show. I always go to her. I try to go to her for show ideas and thoughts and things like that. So, amen. We can share her.
I never go to her for show ideas, but I'll let her guest host my show one time.
Well, we should ask her.
No. And furthermore, I need to let you know that I didn't know this, but I mentioned Emmons County a moment ago, and now I'm getting texts from Emmons County commissioners. Apparently, another misspeaking you made is that the Emmons County budget is $10 million a year. Apparently, you said it was $1 million a year, so I just wanted to clarify that.
That was Scott.
There were people apparently Scott should be banned from the radio airwaves, because every time you get in trouble, it comes back to Scott.
Well, it's so easily verifiable. Just listen to the show.
It's posted on IRKFYR.com.
Yeah, that's
go for
right.
It.
It's easily proven or disproven.
Todd, you give me a different mouse maze to find out what we do on there. My goodness. Anyway, there are people all across this country doing hand counts. I wasn't in Fargo. I don't know exactly what happened, but what I do know is that people are successfully, in fact, my wife has been through the training program to count these votes by hand. It is done very efficiently and can be done well.
But why? We have the most secure elections here in North Dakota as it is.
Okay, you give me one county. Give me one county that has had a Freedom of Information Act requested, because there's a HABA regulation that says every county must maintain 22 months worth of data on the past on those elections. For 22 months, the election must be kept in file in case it's being requested. Not one county in North Dakota has given up a Freedom of Information Act. Why?
I don't know.
Yeah.
What I know is that when you have to present an ID at a polling place to vote and you do not have voter registration, that ensures integrity in the vote. You can't vote twice because they communicate, the counties and the boards of the counties communicate with one another throughout Election Day. And that showing of an ID with an address, a physical address, although they can use P.O. boxes on the reservations, ensures the integrity of the vote here in North Dakota. I've worked in 30 states. This is the most secure elections I have ever seen.
What about South Dakota?
I have not worked in South Dakota.
Two locations in South Dakota. One, by Emory, South Dakota, there was a house that had 1,400 votes cast from it. And in Lawrence County, South Dakota, there's one location that had 1,600 votes cast in the last election.
Well, I'll take you one step further. There are two precincts in Philadelphia that in 2008 and 2012, they had more voters than they had people in the precinct.
Yeah, well, that's what happened in both of those counties as well. And that came from one location.
That's not happening in North Dakota. We need to clean up our own side of the street first, make sure our side of the street is clean first, and then move out to take it to D.C., take it to whomever else is desirous of the North Dakota resolution and ballot integrity.
We'll address that on my next appearance. Final thing I wanted to bring up.
You got 30 seconds.
Farmers are putting sulfur in their fertilizer mix today because we reduced sulfur in diesel fuel. I do not want to have to add CO2 also because we buried too much CO2. It's plant food.
Thank you, Trent. I appreciate it. Thank you for taking the time and coming on the show. We're going to have you on again real soon. Come back and see us again real soon. I am Michael Bell. This is Dakota Mornings, and we are a wrap.